here at the 2018 Money 2020 in Las Vegas, Nevada, here in the Coney DBX Experience Center with Mr. Nico Van Summeren from NanoPay. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Welcome.
You having a good show?
So far, so good. Yeah, busy. Yep. We're busy down here talking to people. People are in and out here and coming through the Coney DBX Experience Center, checking it all out. And upstairs, I think it's just as hectic
it's
and
hectic.
Crazy up there. Yeah. Well, that's what you get when you get 11,000 people jammed into a hotel. Expect anything less. So what's going on at NanoPay these days before we get into our security conversation?
Well, so NanoPay are building technology for the next generation of payments processing and for digitizing fiat money. So we're not a cryptocurrency. We're building a platform which allows us to produce digital representations of good old-fashioned real money issued by central banks.
Okay.
And we're doing that for a variety of use cases, ranging from at the simple early stage level, we're doing small or medium-sized business payments, cross-border payments, and just giving you better ways to do payables and receivables. We're also building platforms for improving liquidity management in large enterprises and banks. And then we have a long-term goal of potentially being able to bring this to nations to produce digital currency and bring digital money to the unbanked.
Excellent. Even better. Even better, because there's a lot of those folks on this planet
there
that
are,
need to be need to be helped out in that area. But we're going to go down a different road in this interview.
Okay.
Because you're the chief security officer at NanoPay, and we were talking before the recording, and you were telling me about blockchain, about how you're not so sure about blockchain. What's going on?
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You ever been on a conference call with more than half a dozen people?
More than half a dozen? Probably not, but I'm sure that happens quite often, though.
You know, distributed consensus is really hard, and you know, most of the blockchain technology is really about trying to say, nobody is going to be the final arbiter of what's in your bank balance. We're just going to sort of come to an agreement by all getting together, and everybody will have a copy of the complete set of balances of everybody. We'll distribute it out to everybody, and we'll all just agree on what's in your bank.
Right.
And you know, anybody who's been on a conference call with more than a few people knows that coming to an agreement is pretty hard.
That's hard.
And
ask any jury.
And indeed, you know, after the fact, you'll probably all disagree on what the agreement was. And this ultimately comes down to the idea that somehow we're going to get better efficiency by having a distribution of who is in charge of the final decision. There's lots of great reasons for wanting to distribute the information. You know, we want it to be resilient. We want
secure.
We want to make sure that when one piece of this is hacked, that the rest of it continue to operate. That's great.
Right.
But having a distributed consensus model, I think, is a much different thing, because it turns out that when you try to do that, you end up with some fairly fundamental problems about the scalability of that and the necessity to replicate all of the information and the necessity to have everybody have every bit of information transferred to them before we can come to a consensus just leads to fundamental scalability problems.
Right.
And what we've found at NanoPay when we started building our core platform is that we could get radically improved levels of performance and levels of scalability when we said, no, we're going to have one authority who will say what is the actual balance. So whether that's the balance in your bank or credit union's balance with the Fed, or whether that's you being in charge of what is in the balance of all of the accounts that you hold within your bank, you've still got an authority who's going to come to that decision.
Right.
And when we centralize the decision making, even if we don't have a centralized implementation, we can actually get many orders of magnitude better performance. So that right now we're building systems that run on a single machine and can handle tens of thousands of transactions a second, which is more than most people need for even a decent sized bank.
Sure. So how do you explain blockchain's popularity throughout the world? Because I mean, there's a lot of sessions on blockchain here.
There certainly
are incredible people on those panels that are talking about it.
So I think that one of the key things here is that we often see when any transformative technology comes along, that there's a conflation between the technology and the transformation. I used to work in the mobile security space, and 5 years ago, there were a lot of companies saying, we need to become a mobile-first organization, because they'd said, well, I used to have this Windows 95 application that all of my staff would use to sign up a new customer,
sure.
say.
Sure.
And it's a clunky old application that uses, you know, Visual Basic, mm-hmm. and the process of signing up a new customer is really clunky.
Oh, yeah.
And then we decided we were going to do this all on an iPad, and so we built this wonderful, shiny new application that does it on an iPad, mm-hmm. and it works so much better, and we can sign up people in, you know, two-thirds the time or half the time, and obviously this is mobility has brought about this transformation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, actually, no, there was a little cognitive leap there. It wasn't the mobility that brought about your transformation. It was the fact that you re-engineered your entire business process. And I think that what we're often seeing with people doing trials of blockchain technology in their organization mm-hmm. is that it's the revamping of your business process that yields the benefits
sure,
rather
sure.
than the blockchain.
Okay, I got you.
And so if you're going to look at any new transformative technology, you would say, what are the real benefits of this?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the benefits of, you know, shuffling everything else in my organization around mm-hmm. to make way for this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And often the latter has more benefit than the former.
Gotcha, gotcha. So where, I mean, so should blockchain, I mean, is it just a passing fad, a trend, or where do we go with this?
You know, the concepts of blockchain have been around for 20 years. They sort of became more well-known with the advent of Bitcoin over the last 10
yeah.
years.
Oh, yeah.
But the fundamental building blocks are even older than that. And I think that many of the pieces that we see in blockchain technology mm-hmm. will continue to persist.
Okay.
But I don't know if the way that we think about blockchain right now is going to be anything that's important to us in 5 or 10 years.
Oh, really?
I think that we'll see, you know, pieces that, just like with any technology innovation, you know, you get a bunch of stuff, you try it all, some settles out, some you stick with, and I don't see that this is going to be any different from any of the other, you know, wonderful transformative technologies. You know, I don't know if you were using the web 20 years ago, but, you know, push technology was going to change the way we did everything on the
that.
Internet.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when did you last see one of those? Well, it's hiding under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 15 years ago, every year for about 4 years in a row was going to be the year of PKI. Everybody was going to change the way they did security in their organization using public key infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And we never saw the year of PKI. There's a hell of a lot of PKI under the hood in everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't see it.
Right.
So, you know, the benefits of the technology will probably come from the transformation that it brings about rather than from the technology itself.
Gotcha, gotcha. Totally understand, totally understand. Let's switch gears a little bit to what keeps you awake at night when it comes to security? Because I can imagine the things that you see that somebody like me, I only see a small, tiny little tidbit, but you see a whole bunch. And then to be a credit union CEO or a community bank CEO, you know, to worry about this stuff has just got to be tremendous.
Yeah. So I think you tend to be kept awake at night if you don't have a fantastic team. You can't do this all on your own.
Right.
So depending on the size of your organization, maybe that team is all internal, or maybe you're bringing in resources from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also think that you have to ensure that thinking about cybersecurity is a fundamental part of your culture in the organization. Security isn't something you can layer on after the fact. Security is something that has to be infused all the way through your organization.
Oh, yeah, especially today.
And so you have to, you know, whether, it doesn't matter what piece of the organization people are in, they have to think about this, whether it's the receptionist, whether it's people in, you know, front desk jobs,
mm-hmm.
whether it's people in the back end, whether it's people in IT, it doesn't really matter. Everybody has to do their part. But you have to have that a holistic solution. And you have to be thinking about security in a holistic way. Because generally, when people break into systems or organizations, they find the gaps between, you know, maybe somebody thought about this and somebody thought about this, but they don't quite meet, and that's where they come in. So it's very important to have somebody or some team of people whose job it is to think about that in the holistic way. And the other thing that I've always found with any sort of organization trying to get good security is that you have to have somebody in the room all the time talking about it whenever, you know, in a tech shop, in product development, there's always somebody saying we need better usability or we need new features or we need more performance or better scalability. If you don't have somebody in the same discussion, you know, in that inevitable resource allocation process, saying, and we have to think about security, and raising that voice as loudly as all of the other important things to getting your business done, then you'll never achieve the security that you want, no matter how well-intentioned and how well-trained people are. So just keeping it top of mind and, you know, trying to stay abreast with the latest threats. Technology is useful for just filtering the immense load of cyber threats, but people are really important. People in the threat intelligence, people in the analysis, people in the operational security.
Yeah, I keep calling it the double-edged sword because you have convenience on one side and then you have security on the other side, and consumers are demanding convenience, and it gets more and more convenience, but you got to have the security there as well. So that's that balancing.
It's a balance, but I don't think that it's necessarily a zero-sum game. I actually do think that if you get good at security in your organization, you can use security as an enabler rather than as a disabler.
Okay.
You know, so often we're used to the security team as being like the ministry of no.
Exactly.
It's like, can I do this?
Yeah.
No. Can I do this? No. Actually, if you think about it right, you can start to get to a point where, you know, we've created this new security feature, and now we can let our customers do something that they couldn't do before. And so if you build a team of people in your organization who think about how can we use security to make people's life better, not just make them secure, but actually enable them to do new stuff, then that actually stops security from just being a cost center, and now it can actually be, you know, a potential driver of revenue.
Just turning it around. Yeah. Very cool. You know what? You should probably go into marketing, because I like that spin. I like that spin a lot. So just to kind of wrap up here, because I know we could talk about this for hours. So just, and where are we going with all of this stuff in the rest of this year and then going into 2019?
With NanoPay security, or with security?
Security, and then how NanoPay kind of helps on there.
Well, I think that, you know, more threats, more bad guys, more breaches, panic, doom, gloom.
Business as usual.
Business as usual. There's not, you know, it's, you know, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. You know, it's, you know, we're going to continue to see this. But I think that, I'm not going to say we're winning the fight, but I think people are getting more mature about how they think about this.
I like that,
Now, that just means that the bad guys get smarter. They change their focus. And if we're going to stay ahead of this, what we have to do is not think about playing whack-a-mole. You know, so often I see a lot of organizations say, oh my God, these people got hacked this way, we better protect against that. And that doesn't work in security, because otherwise you're always patching the hole that has already been used.
Exactly, yeah.
And so what you have to do is think about this more in a risk management way. It's about analyzing, where do I feel like I've got potential for vulnerabilities? What can I do to better evaluate the amount of risk that I have there? And, you know, trying to quantify the risk is generally very hard. But if you can get to the point where you can start to quantify risk in the different parts of your organization, you can start to better allocate your resources. Because we all have finite resources.
Of course.
And so we have to work out, you know, where are the risks, what can we do to ameliorate those risks, and what's the trade-offs that we have to make to work out where to spend. And that's the crucial thing if you want to get ahead of this.
Indeed. All right. Great message to end on. Nico, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Well,